David, good morning. What are first things today?
It's a presidential debate day today, Steve. It's one of the few days in the election cycle when you sit around and you wait and wait and wait for the evening.
Well, I was reading that Mike Pence is going to do two actual events. I didn't see what Trump had planned. Kamala Harris is doing a virtual event with a women's get out the vote group. What does that tell you about where things are going? Money is tight for Trump, but he's still flying around.
Sure. Well, there are only a few moments or things in a presidential campaign that this late in a campaign can make a difference. Unfortunately, in 2016, the Comey letter was one of those. But another one is usually a presidential debate where a candidate can say something or get someone else to say something. And these are high drama moments in the political cycle. They're what I call political theater moments. And this is the last one of this campaign, Biden and Trump tonight. So I wanted to talk about presidential debates because they have this outsized importance in the campaign, but they also have this outsized importance in the memories and in the impact upon people who watch them. And that's what I want to talk about because that was an experience that I had.
Well, let's hear it. But let me ask you a question because you said it. The Comey letter came out the 28th of October. Talk about an October surprise.
Yep.
Is there evidence that it really shifted enough votes in those key states that shifted the outcome?
Yeah, it appears to have moved a couple points towards Trump in those key battleground states in the Midwest, that it affirmed or reaffirmed to enough Americans that they didn't trust Hillary Clinton, and it confirmed the narrative that Trump had been offering of crooked Hillary. So, you know, Trump is pushing for a comparable thing this election with William Barr and the FBI. And he's been saying that two days ago, he said they need to act. They need to do something. This guy is a criminal, referring to Biden. So I expect we're going to get a lot of that kind of language from Trump tonight about Biden being, in his mind, a criminal and covering up for his son. And I think that's going to be the primary line that Trump's going to bring tonight. So I want to talk about the most important presidential debate for me. And these are always personal things for people because, you know, you remember what you were doing or watching or seeing and where. And in 2012, first debate, October 3rd, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney had a debate, and Barack Obama was horrible. He was terrible in this debate. He wasn't prepared. He seemed disinterested, didn't seem to really want to be president again. And I was doing a series of presidential lectures. I can mark my own professional journey through presidential campaigns because of books I've written, research I've done, and lectures that I've done. And in 2012, I had a lecture on October 9th, 6 days later. And I really was crushed by the way that Obama showed up in that presidential debate. And so I came into that next lecture and people were just discouraged, really fearful and discouraged in 2012. And this was at the University of Washington in one of the big Kane halls. And I was a professor at the UW and I was there under the heading of being a professor. And I was doing these public talks and the UW Alumni Association and others were sponsoring these talks. And in the course of that talk, I told a story and the story was based upon an experience and knowledge I had about Gettysburg, the Battle of Gettysburg. And a person in that battle who I had learned about over the years and have been inspired by. And I had been to Gettysburg that summer and for the first time, and I had written an opinion piece about it. And the Seattle Times had published it on the front page of the Seattle Times on July 4th, this opinion piece. And so some of these thoughts were really salient to me. And the story in a nutshell was this that I told in that lecture was about this guy, Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, who was a professor at Bowdoin College in Maine and enlisted, volunteered for the Civil War for the 20th Maine Regiment and went into the war and served. And turned out that on that day, that Battle of Gettysburg on day two, he was charged with holding the line, the far line, end of the line for the Union soldiers. And he was on Little Round Top, this hill there. And he was charged with holding it. And at about two-thirds of the way through the battle that day, Chamberlain, who was leading, he was the captain for the 20th Maine, the Confederates were getting around them. The Confederates were about to come around the end of the line, and they were going to flank the Union Army, and they would be able to swing in and crush them from the side. And Chamberlain's group was at the top of the hill, which is always a strong military position. But they were out of ammunition. They were out of ammunition. And so they'd said, Captain, what are we going to do? And Chamberlain pulled them together, the leaders, really quick and said, fix bayonets. We're going down the hill. And they put on their bayonets and they swung left because he was at the far left end of the line. And they swung left with their bayonets and actually flanked the Confederates and chased them back down the hill and dispersed them and won that particular part of the battle and saved the end of the Union line. It's a very famous military maneuver that is taught in the military war colleges of how you lead in times of crisis and how you are resourceful when you don't have the pieces that you need. This is an inspiring piece to me. It's made famous in the book, The Killer Angels, a book about Gettysburg. And the reason that story has stuck with me is because Chamberlain was a professor at Bowdoin College, and he was a professor of rhetoric, of communication. And he left that position to go serve in the military and to fight for the Union, for his country. And then he returned to Maine and became a governor, four-term governor in Maine. And that sense of like what someone can do as a professor, that was my life at the, obviously, how they can take risks, they can do things that are beyond what they could have imagined, and they can change the course of history. I told that story in the lecture, at the end of the lecture on October 9th, 2012. And I said to folks, it's time to come down the hill and to fight for everything we're worth. If we want this presidency to continue, if we want America to be on the trajectory we want, we've got to get outside of what we normally do. We've got to fight. And so somebody raised their hand and at the end and said, so what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to do a fundraiser for Obama. And I'd never said those words before. And I had been asked to do one by some colleagues outside of the university. And I said, I'll do one. I'm going to do it at my house. I'm going to do it this Saturday, 4 days later at my house. And there were 500 people in that lecture. And I had no idea what I was going to do or how we were going to do it. But I said, I will send you the emails. I'll give you the address if you want to come. And so that Saturday, I did do the fundraiser, and I had Anita Verna Cross, who's now part of Common Power, part of our field work team. She made pie. We cut pie into a bunch of small pieces. We had hundreds of people come to my house, and we had Susie Levine, who was one of the two Women for Obama national campaign co-chairs. Susie Levine come and speak and do two different sessions at the house because there just wasn't enough room to do everybody at once. And not 500 came, more like 100, 125. But I remember coming home from that lecture that night and telling my wife that I had just invited 500 people to our house and in 4 days. And she said, what? what are you doing? And I said, don't worry, you're going to be out of town. because I knew she was going to be out of town. So I was like, this is it. I'll do it when she's not here. And so she said, yeah, but you got to, you know, the house, you got to prepare it. You got to get everything ready. And I'm like, don't worry, we got this. And I didn't remotely have it, not remotely. But I got things ready and we did the fundraiser. And Lisa wasn't here. And so I survived that moment in our marriage. And so that was a moment, though, where I stepped outside of any sense of what I was as a professor or as a citizen, small c citizen of this country, and what it meant to fight, to fix our bayonets and to fight. Now, that's the gist of the story, mostly for me, of a moment in time when, from a presidential debate, I was inspired to do something more and beyond anything I'd ever done before. But there's just a little bit more to that story too, which is that on that Tuesday, I delivered those words to the audience. And on Wednesday, I got some phone calls from leadership at the University of Washington, which said, so we have gotten calls from various people that were at your lecture last night, and we just need to get some details on what exactly you said and you did. And they said, did you invite people to a fundraiser for Barack Obama? And I said, I did. Okay. And they said, you understand that, you know, this was a University of Washington lecture sponsored by the Alumni Association, and you're a professor at the university. And they said, you can do this. You have the right, you know, as a citizen, of course, to articulate and to say what you want to say. But that's not the position of this university, and you put us in a very difficult position. And so I got chewed out. I got a talking to. It wasn't what I couldn't do, but it wasn't what they wanted me to do. And I had to deal with that and think that one through about where I was and who I was and what I wanted out of my professional career. And it was a risk and it was a cost. There were implications. And I shouldn't probably have done it because I was on the physical ground of the university. And even though I was there as a citizen doing my thing and speaking, it was still nonetheless sponsored by their folks. So it was a learning moment of me beginning to realize that perhaps I wanted to be on a different physical ground eventually and to be able to offer those opinions and to be more risk-taking and bold in other spaces. And that's where I'm at now with Common Power. That was part of the journey. But I guess that I ask everybody listening to this podcast the question that I got asked is, what are we going to do? We have 12 days left in this election cycle before we hit the crisis of the post-election period. And is there something that we can do that we haven't done yet that is a risk, that is stretches us? Is it make a few more calls? Is it talk to a loved one? Is it devote, dedicate some money? Is it put a yard sign out? What is it exactly? All I know is that in times of crisis like this country faces now, and in times of anxiety like we all feel, we got to be together and we got to be resourceful and we got to figure things out as we go. So tonight is a presidential debate. I don't know what we're going to see, but whatever happens, we are the ones that carry it forward after the debate tonight, not Joe Biden, not Donald Trump, but we have the power in our hands to carry it forward. That's my thoughts about presidential debate day today.
So I guess it's not, we don't end this podcast by just saying, let's get to work. We end it by saying, we got work to do.
We do. And I'm not asking you to jump off a cliff. I'm simply saying, within the means of what is available to me and to everybody, within those means, what is possible for us, I know that we got 10 more days, 11 more days, 12 more days. And after tonight, there are no more game-changing moments. Even if there's another Comey letter, it is in our hands. It's in our hands. So let's get back to work.